giving a voice to the fans. Okay, one fan. On this episode of Locked On Pelicans, I'm Brett Dawson.
Davis on the log! 2-point game, 2 seconds to play. It worked to perfection.
And what does that highlight have to do with this episode? Pretty much nothing. I just like putting sound there. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate. This is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we have a little bit different episode today. There probably won't be a lot of news today, and there's certainly not going to be any news discussed on the podcast because I'm recording this on Monday night and it's the Tuesday podcast. As I told you yesterday, the Pelicans are doing teleconferences for all their free agent signees. Langston Galloway went on Monday. Solomon Hill is the guy on Tuesday. I wouldn't expect much news out of that. And if there was any, you won't hear about it here because the podcast will be up by the time he does that conference call. What I wanted to do today is shift the podcast to what I think will kind of be the format as it shifts away from the daily schedule. So, starting next week, the podcast will come out once or twice a week for the off season. And there's not going to be a lot of news to react to, not a lot of, things to talk about in terms of free agent moves or anything of that nature. And so what I wanted to do is kind of shift to a format where, you know, we have a guest on, we have a little bit longer interview, and we talk about some bigger picture topics that are of interest to me and to the guest and hopefully to you. To do this for the first time, to kind of experiment with it, I brought on my friend Mason Ginsburg. He's at Mason Ginsburg on Twitter. A very good follow for Pelicans fans. He does some writing for Bourbon Street Shots. You might hear him on the radio every now and then. He's just a guy who is very much in tune with the Pelicans and I think is a good guy to be a voice of Pelicans fans in a way. So I had Mason come on to talk about a range of things, and this will cover some of the basic kind of topics we've already talked about on this podcast. You know, the off-season stuff, the free agent signings, but also some bigger picture stuff, just about the future of the franchise, about New Orleans as a basketball city, and then just veering off into some very different topics that I won't spoil, including a point where I trick Mason into saying nice things about me. Anyway, we're going to dive right in here in just a second to talk to Mason, and hopefully you'll enjoy this format because this is something that I like doing, and I think we're going to do a little bit more of. But first, got to get to some announcements. So by now you know, right, that the place to go to get your Pelicans coverage is theadvocate.com. You can go there today and read my Langston Galloway story that came off that conference call he did on Monday morning. You can also get all the Pelicans coverage we do all offseason and all season long from me, from Scott Kushner, from Rod Walker. It's a great place to get LSU coverage. Football camp is just about to start, and Ross Dellinger will be all over that. Just last night, Monday night, Alex Bregman made his Major League debut, and Chandler Rome was in Houston, giving The Advocate a ton of great coverage. So if you're into the Pelicans, if you're into LSU, The Advocate is absolutely the place to check it out at theadvocate.com. It's also the place to go for Saints coverage from Nick Underhill and Joel Erickson. And if you like the Saints, and if you like that coverage, and if you like this podcast, you are in luck because now there's Locked On Saints, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a daily place for you to go and get news and updates and information and insight and opinion about the Saints from Nick and Joel, who cover the Saints for The Advocate, and from Adam West, who previously hosted the Underhill and West podcast with Nick. That's moving over to our network. I think you'll really like it. So if you subscribe to this podcast, if you like it, definitely check out that one. If you don't subscribe to this podcast, what are you doing? Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, sign up for a subscription. Go to iTunes and leave us a rating. I love 5-star ratings. Leave us a review, say a few nice words. That would be great. Helps us get a little bit more attention, move up some lists. And we definitely want as many people as possible to hear the product. So help me get the word out. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on the podcast, as you know by now, you can email me at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. That's also a great address to send me any questions that you might have. I do a question and answer segment periodically on the podcast. Anything you want to say about the format, any suggestions you have, shoot all that stuff to me at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. And having said all that, I'm tired of talking. So let's let Mason Ginsburg talk a little bit. As I said, I think this will be more along the lines of the off-season format. Once we're back into daily podcasts closer to the start of the season, there's going to be more daily kind of stuff to react to. But I don't want to lose sight of some of this bigger picture stuff. And even during the season, I think periodically, I'd like to do this kind of podcast. But for the next month and a half or so, I think this will be more often than not the format, these slightly longer interviews, slightly wider ranging. So let me know what you think about it. And let's bring in Mason and get started with this one. So Mason Ginsberg does join us. Mason, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to get you on here to talk about all sorts of things, and I kind of want the podcast not to be always reacting to news, just like, oh, this guy signed, and you know that guy, the All-Star game.
You want to talk about waiters? Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like I do not need another person to say whether they thought Solomon Hill was a good decision or not. Like I think we've done that.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you just going in, because obviously, you know, Scott Kushner and I did a podcast, and we're incredibly smart, wherein he
and modest.
Yeah, right, exactly. And he predicted Solomon Hill was going to sign with the Pelicans. I predicted Terrence Jones was going to sign with the Pelicans. I wonder just basically what you thought was going to happen going into free agency and just on the whole what you thought of what happened.
So I wasn't pessimistic by any means about what was going to happen. You know, I love the addition of Danny Ferry to the front office. I don't think that by himself, he was the reason the Pelicans took this quote unquote new direction. I mean, I think they stuck with the young veterans theme that they've been trying all along. They just took a kind of a different approach and went more of like two-way, you know, smart basketball players rather than these bigger names that really only play on one side of the ball. So I didn't expect as much movement as we got. It was a pleasant surprise. I don't think the Pelicans overpaid for anyone. I think of all the transactions, Solomon Hill has a little bit of risk involved, obviously, if he's more of the first half player last year than the second half playoff player that he was for the duration of his contract, that doesn't look that good. But he's young. I think he's improving. I think the risk is not that significant. And all the other guys, I think, are very smart strategic signings. And, you know, even though it takes up pretty much all their cap and, you know, gives them they're able to really to move maybe a couple of these guys if they want to create some serious space for next summer, because I don't think any of these contracts are bad contracts.
Right. Were you surprised? Did anything really catch you off guard? Was there anything where you thought, whoa, I didn't see that coming?
No, I don't think so. The maneuvering around the cap was very impressive. It's sometimes looking at the numbers, I was like, how are they going to make this work? And then sure enough, they made it work. Obviously, the Terrence Jones signing, when we heard about it at the minimum, was fairly surprising. But, you know, putting Terrence Jones and AD back together so you can cover your Kentucky guys again, I'm sure that was priority number one for the Pelicans. So
they do ask me a lot about moves. They ask me a lot about personnel stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So nothing terribly surprising, but all in, I think it was a very solid offseason.
Somebody told me, I'd asked about Terrence Jones like a really long time ago with somebody who kind of knows the Pelicans, and they said, you know, it's probably like two moves away. They'd probably have to do some things to get Terrence Jones. And when I picked him, when I said, like, that's a guy, I predicted him as a guy they would sign, I really kind of did it because I was going to say Solomon Hill, and I let Kushner go first, and he said Solomon Hill, and so I was just kind of scrambling to think of somebody. And I did always think that was going to be on the radar, but I didn't think they were going to get him at the minimum. Not this year. Not like this of all years. I did not think you'd get Terrence Jones on the minimum.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised, you know, going back to that cap thing, when I heard we signed Langston Galloway for 2 years, $10 million, albeit with the second year as a player option, I was like, wow, we just lost Tim Frazier. It's unfortunate. It's not a killer, but it's unfortunate. And then sure enough, we brought him back for the room mid-level. So, you know, they made things work, made things happen. It was a good offseason.
Yeah, I was the same way. In fact, people were asking me, is this the end of the Tim Frazier thing on Twitter? And I was like, you know, today it seems like it. The day of the Langston Galloway thing, yeah, I thought, yeah, that's probably it. It's probably not going to happen. But I think, you know, and you and I have talked about this off the air. You know, I think that they did things in free agency with the mindset that whatever Tyreke Evans gives them this year is not going to be much, that they can't count on a significant contribution from him, whether that's because he gets healthy and they trade him, whether it's because he's not healthy. This was a free agency designed, a free agency period where they thought, like, we're not banking on that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it was first and foremost, I think it was filling holes. I know they know that they needed help at the small forward position, and they filled that. And then, as you said, they added a few combo guards. Now they have Jrue Holiday, they have Etuan Moore, they have Langston Galloway. They have these three guys that can play both both guard positions. And I think, you know, to your point again, that's it was designed. So no matter how long Tyreek's out, if they can even move him, if he can get healthy, I think that's definitely in the cards.
What's the is there one thing about them next year that interests you the most? One thing that you think like here's what I'm watching.
I am really curious to see who they finish games with. And I know it's going to be matchup dependent, obviously, but you know they have they're versatile. It doesn't mean they're exceptionally good. It just means they can do a lot of different things. I mean, if they really need that rebounding force, that's why I like the Terrence Jones thing more than anything. Is that I was sitting after we got finished the Langston Galloway signing, I said, wow, who's going to finish games? It was either Omer or you're playing someone at the four who's going to be undersized and you're going to get hurt on the boards because AD can't all do it all by himself. And now if Terrence Jones can be even, you know, 75% of what he was two years ago, 3 years ago, then I think you've got a guy that, you know, if you don't want Omer out there as dead weight on offense, you can maybe throw Terrence Jones out there and see what he can do.
Yeah, I really love that signing at the minimum because I think, like, you talked about this with, like, Solomon Hill's the risky contract, but he's the guy who can really exceed a contract of the guys that they got. You have an idea of what some of these guys are. Langston Galloway might perform better than what you're paying him. Conceivably, Etwan Moore might. But Terrence Jones is the guy who could way, way outperform what you paid him. I just think that is such a low-risk, high-reward kind of move. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, you talked about, you know, what they could do to create cap flexibility for next year. And I want to tell people, like, you're a great follow on Twitter for people who don't know for cap stuff, because you really do follow the cap pretty closely. You understand the cap really well. I just go to you. Instead of looking stuff up, I just look up what you have to say about the cap. But this is a fascinating year to me because Drew Holiday is such a big, important part of that cap and what happens with their cap room for next year. And he's a guy who, if he's healthy, I assume they're going to want to have around. I think he's going to have a decision to make because if he has a good year and he's healthy, he's going to get a lot of attention. There are going to be a lot of people who are interested in a two-way point guard who can do the things that he does. I wonder what you think about – I don't want to look too far ahead. It's ridiculous to try to predict next offseason. But I wonder what you're thinking is right now mindset-wise. Like, what do you think is key for them this year, and what do you think they need to look at next year?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to shout out both Jason Combs on our site, or 42, as a lot of people know him. I go to him whenever I have any CBA questions, so he's the master. And David Fisher for the Bird Rights also does a great job with the cap. So I've definitely got help in that regard on both sides. So regarding next season, I think I think right now option number one is, assuming Holiday's healthy, you keep his cap hold and you try to retain him, because there's not – in terms of wings, and that's still the area that people are going to focus on, because unless Solomon Hill totally blows up this year, there's not a lot of, you know, there's a players out there who are going to really help this team as much and are realistic for the Pelicans to go get as Drew Holiday would. And I think that's where you start, and you can play with that free cap space and then bring Drew Holiday back last, since you have his bird rights. And so I think that's the most likely option, is to try to do whatever you can to bring Drew Holiday back. It's not by any means a sure thing. And obviously he has to play for a full season healthy. I mean, the second half of last year was a great sign and points in that direction. But, you know, a lot of moving parts, and you've got the Dante Cunningham and Galloway both have player options that if the cap's going up again, you would expect them to decline. No certainty, but I think that's the reasonable expectation. So you would have a decent amount of, not a max player by any stretch, but even with the Drew Holiday cap hold, you have about $13 million in cap space, assuming those two guys opt out. That's got the first round pick in there too, but there's money to play with, you know, even if you keep Drew Holiday's cap hold and bring him back. So a lot of moving parts, like I said, so we'll see what happens.
I've said this whole sort of offseason period since they finished, basically since I guess Terrence Jones was last. Since all this was kind of wrapped up, I've said, and I've had some people tell me this, it's not entirely an uninformed opinion, it's something that I've talked to some people about, that they built a team, they built a roster in this offseason. Obviously, they looked at defense. They looked at fit with the offense. I think they looked at guys who they felt like complimented Anthony Davis and gave him a chance to sort of, you know, shine, to be back to what he was the year before this, who would get him the ball. But I also think they built a team that if you're a missing piece type of guy, they become real intriguing next year if they
are pretty good this year. If they are, you know, this year they were so far out of the playoff picture that you couldn't be a free agent who and say, like, I could get those guys in the playoffs because they didn't have the money for a guy like that. And if they did, they couldn't do anything else. Now, I think you, if you're that kind of guy, if you're a guy who's like a scoring wing, for example, a piece that they need, I think you could go in next offseason and find some guys who say, you know what, that's a place where they're about to do something and I can help them do it.
Yeah, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the Pelicans don't have a lot of scores anymore. I mean, they drafted Buddy Hield, but if you come in, if you're looking at this team from the outside saying, I'm going to get some shots, I'm going to get some touches here, obviously play within Alvin Gentry's system. But, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think this could be a very appealing situation, provided the Pelicans show some real progress this year, and that's obviously a big variable.
Yeah, I am not going to ask you if you think they're going to make the playoffs. People ask this all the time, like, what are they going to look like and how many games they're going to win? And I tell people all the time, I think 40 is a great number because a 10-win improvement, that's hard in the NBA. It's really hard to do. And they've shed offense and added defense, and you have no idea how they're going to be really different. But we have no idea what they're going to look like. I mean, I'd like to at least just maybe see some of these guys play together before I say, oh, you know, they're going to win 45 games and they'll be, you know, right there for the 8th seed. I have no clue.
Yeah, I've said fringe playoff team ever since the free agency kind of finished, and I stick with that. It's just going to be I think they're a lower variance team. I think their ceiling may be lower with the guys they have, but also their floor is lower. They've got more depth now, and I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch this team play. I mean, they've got like you said, they've improved the defense, and every team since Anthony Davis has been drafted by the Hornets / Pelicans has been at least league average on offense. I think Jim Eichenhofer pointed that out the other day as well. So if you can get that defense up to – if you get it into the top 20, I think you're getting into the playoffs conversation. If you can get the defense up to around league average, then you're really making a push for the playoffs. So I think, you know, assuming that the offense remains at least at league average, hope maybe closer to top 10. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's that's going to be really interesting. I remember the – golden age of media day when those guys were like, we're going to be a top 10 defense this year.
That didn't go every year, right?
That didn't go great. And then I think somebody was offended by the top 10 suggestion. I think it was Dante Cunningham who said they would be top 5. So
Dante. Keep it up this year.
So I want to, you know, that's about the extent of what I want to talk about in terms of free agency and this team and smaller picture stuff. And I want to look at a couple of bigger picture things. But to do that, I feel like a lot of people understand who you are, but I want to talk a little bit about that, how you came to be a guy who is somebody on Twitter who's worth noting and somebody who writes some stuff about the Pelicans. You grew up here, right, in New Orleans?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how much a part of your youth, I guess, were the Hornets?
A pretty big part. My family got season tickets the year they came here in 2002. I've enjoyed it. You know, I was a baseball guy growing up.
You still are a baseball guy, correct?
I still am, but that was my thing. I was looking at the backs of baseball cards and looking at all the stats in the newspaper every morning. And you know, I like basketball obviously, but baseball is always the sport I was best at playing. And then the Hornets got here, and I think in terms of, you know, my fan loyalty, I think as the analytics revolution, so to speak, in basketball happened after baseball. I was too young to really grasp it and kind of ride it when I was younger. But basketball, you know, I was in college, and I feel like that's when the analytics stuff really started taking hold with John Hollinger and everything at ESPN. And I just kind of started saying, hey, this would be fun. And after college, a buddy of mine and I started writing Saints and Hornets stuff. And then I guess things just kind of snowballed.
That's, you know, it's fascinating because basketball for me, it was almost the exact opposite way. I'm older, so when the baseball thing was happening, basketball was my favorite sport. When that analytics sort of revolution was happening in baseball, I remember thinking, like, I hope this never happens to basketball. I was like, I feel like basketball has this human element to it that these baseball analytics sort of strip away, and I hope that never happens in basketball. And yet, I feel like in basketball, it's happened without some of that being stripped away. We still talk, like, whether or not there's, like, you know, statistics will argue against the idea that a guy is clutch, and yet there's still this human element of arguing that. There's still this human element that, like, oh, I want this guy taking the shot, regardless of what the stats say and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, Charles Barkley.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm interested in that give and take. I like that give and take. I'm somebody who's actually come very much around to advanced stats, and I use them probably more than Maybe more than the typical mainstream guy might use them, I think, if you look around at newspaper writers in the NBA.
I would agree.
But it took me a while. It took me a little while to come around to that idea. I wasn't quite Barkley, but I was a little bit stuck in the mud. But I like that. I like that sort of give and take. I like that fight. I like that there are people who still say, no, this isn't what this is. And I do think basketball has a chemistry element that isn't really taken into account there that you have to figure out. And it's not just numbers on paper. I think when you're building a team and you do it strictly that way, you are, I think, doomed in some ways.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's part art, part science. I think that's very important. It's something that more people maybe have a hard time coming around to than others. Like I think about baseball and how instant replay is only a recent thing, even though it's been possible for years. And talking about the human element of the game, and it's like, well, that's all well and good, but I'd rather get the call right. But I think in that same light, I think people are finally starting to come around, but realizing also that there's a human element to this, and the chemistry point can't be overlooked.
So how did Bourbon Street Shots happen
for you? I mean, that's been so they're the the ESPN Troop Network affiliate for the Hornets/Pelicans. We were Hornets 24/7, but that's been going on for a while. Our recently retired Michael McNamara, along with Ryan Schwan, Jason, and Joe Garrity, who, Joe, if you're listening, come write something again. it was those four guys, and then they brought on we've been adding pieces. They brought on Jake and I and James Grayson, and then we've just been adding more guys, and it really helps because, I mean, even from a personal perspective, the team was not good. So that was a demotivator, but I rejoined the working world after grad school. And for the past year, I've definitely been writing less, but we have other great writers to pick up the slack. So, it's been fun. I guess I've been with them for like 4 to 5 years now, something like that. It's been a lot of fun. No one, we don't take a dime for the writing. We just kind of do it as we can and as we want to. And it's really, really fun. Good group of guys.
We should tell people you went to Tulane and then Texas for grad school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now Chicago. World traveler. I'm fascinated as a newcomer. I've lived here almost a year now. I know because my 10-month lease is up and I'm apartment hunting. I'm sort of fascinated by I never know what to call the sort of bloggers that surround a team, the bloggers that are in a team's orbit. I tend to say like fan media, which isn't exactly right. It's more accurate, especially, it's much more accurate in college where I used to work when I covered colleges, because it's such a, certainly the guys writing at, say, Bourbon Street Shots or the Bird Rights or whatever, those guys are fans. You guys are rooting for the team. You want the team to succeed. And there's in college, I think there's a knee-jerk defense of the team that I don't think quite exists, at least here in the NBA stuff. I mean, like, I think the some of you guys can be as critical of the team as anybody in the way that I think fans can be. You just don't get that element a lot in college. I'm sort of fascinated by the way that sort of works here. I think it's a very different dynamic pro to college.
Yeah. I mean, everyone can, especially none of us are paid to do it. So there will be some inherent biases that come out, and I'm not immune to that. I don't think anyone's immune to that, but at the same time, I think most of us aren't afraid to be critical and just take a look from an analytical perspective and break things down and say, what worked, what didn't. I mean, there are plenty of times that we think something's going to work out and it doesn't. It's like, what we thought was going to happen didn't happen. Last season's a perfect example. We saw a 45-win team that played really well at a 50-win pace when everyone was healthy. The core is brought back most, I think, a lot of because with the amount of cap space available, is pretty much keep these guys bird rights, go over the cap to re-sign your own guys. You don't have a lot of cap space to work with if you don't do that. And so there was still a lot of optimism around the team. Everyone came back, continuity, and then injuries happened, a totally new offensive system happened, and all these bad things happened at once. And, the wheels fall off the bus, and that kind of thing happens. You get excited, things don't work out, and hopefully this year, I think we're all very cautiously optimistic about the team this year. Maybe not playoffs, but hopefully close. And who knows? They could exceed our expectations, just like they fell short last year.
Right. The other thing that interests me about that whole dynamic is that, for me, for somebody who came from a place where, so like when I was covering Kentucky, the fans who run blogs, particularly like the biggest one. It's a very, very combative relationship with mainstream media, and you have had some of that in your life. Certainly on Twitter, you've been combative at times. But I found that whole thing really welcoming. And this may not be interesting to people, but it's interesting to me. So it's my podcast. But when I got here, guys like you and Jake reached out right away. You guys promoted work. It felt very, very, very different to me than that sort of the sort of combative atmosphere I experienced covering colleges. It's a really different kind of thing. I like the sort of media vibe here for the most part, although there is some clashing from time to time, right?
Yeah, sure. And I think what it ultimately comes down to is, hopefully this isn't anything earth-shattering, but we respect good work. And, heard good things about you coming in, and you have more than lived up to it. You and Scott both do a fantastic job, and we are more than happy to share whatever you guys do because you're so good at it. So, I know you weren't looking for this kind of shameless promotion, but I'm going to give it to you.
That was the whole reason I did this, just so you would do that.
Well done. Well played, sir. I think no matter who you talk to in the New Orleans basketball community respects the work that you both do at the Advocate. And, we were very happy to see you brought on board and Scott taking an even bigger role in the Pelicans than he has in the past.
Yeah, that really was not what I was trying to get at there. I do find the whole thing. I like the fact that, while there is some kind of back and forth, I do like the fact that people aren't it's not combative by nature. There's no, like, the default setting is not to be like the mainstream media is bad and the new wave media is good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely not the case. I think it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from, what you write for. Just, do quality work, and I think you're going to be respected and appreciated.
I'm very tempted to edit out this nice stuff that you say about me because I feel like people are going to be like, what an ass to like, dig for that.
Don't do that.
That's not what I was trying to do. We talked about the fact that you grew up here and that the Hornets came here while you lived here. And now you live in Chicago, which is, I don't know where the Bulls fall in the pecking order. I used to live close to there. I know a lot of people from Chicago. So the Cubs are bigger. The Bears are bigger, but they're huge. The Bulls are a huge thing. And I wonder, as somebody now who lives in what I think is a really good NBA city, I don't know if I'd call it an NBA city because the places that I think of NBA first cities is like Portland and places that don't have, the NFL or their LA, which no matter what LA ever has, the Lakers will be sort of the story. But I wonder from your perspective as a guy who grew up here, who knows the impact sort of that the Saints have here and the influence they have on the city, and somebody now who's lived somewhere else with the team. What's your impression of New Orleans as an NBA city? And this interests me because I'm such a newcomer here. And just where you think the Pelicans stand in the New Orleans hierarchy now?
It's tough, first and foremost, because I haven't really lived there in, I guess, man, it's been three years now, I guess. But it was really interesting because they didn't really, when the Pelicans or the Hornets first got to New Orleans in 2002, they were good. They had 1 year in the Eastern Conference and made the playoffs, lost to Philly, I think. And then they basically, the Chris Paul era started. And, well, you got David West and you got Chris Paul and this team is fun. And then, Katrina hits.
Right.
And so the team moves to Oklahoma City. Any momentum that was to be gained from this awesome rookie Chris Paul that they drafted is gone. And, if they make it back, thank goodness, as did the Saints. And I mean, I think even the timelines just were kind of fascinating with, everyone remembers the Gleason block, which is just phenomenal. And the Saints coming back beating the Falcons. And, the Hornets also were pretty darn good. And moving up, I still remember the 2007-2008 season when they, were up 3-2 in the second round to the Spurs and couldn't steal the deal. They had a game at home and couldn't finish it. The Spurs took them. And then things started, then the Chris Paul rumors that he was leaving started coming. And now it's been an uphill battle again. So, it's still hard to say. You have to, and especially recently, you'd have to ask probably a local other locals who I'm sure you have asked about this, but I think New Orleans can support a basketball team. I think, For in the long term, of course, like any small market, performance matters. I think we're going to have really interesting test case in Oklahoma City in the near future with Kevin Durant leaving and Westbrook, I would presume, probably on his way out. We'll see what happens in Oklahoma City when the team's not as good. So, because even when the Hornets went to Oklahoma City, they were a good team. And so OKC hasn't had a team struggling. They've always had a team on the rise. And so, you know, we'll see. But I like I said, it performance matters. When the Pelicans are playing well, they're going to get fans. And, you know, the dynamic is interesting with the Saints. I've you mentioned Chicago, and I've seen it with the Bulls and Blackhawks, because I've only been here for a year, but the Blackhawks are by far the more favored team right now in the United Center. But that's because they've won, three Stanley Cups in the last 5 or 6 years. So I don't think we've gotten to a situation where the Hornets or / Pelicans were fantastic and the Saints were just abysmal. So it's, we've had the opposite. So I'd be very curious to see what happens in that sort of scenario. And I don't wish it. I'd rather both teams be great forever. But, sure. It's going to be interesting to see that situation play out as well.
No, that's the thing. Like I talk about, Portland, San Antonio, those places that don't have the NFL, L.A., which has had it and will have it again and will still love the Lakers the most. And then you have places like New York where there's so many people that it doesn't matter. Like I think the Yankees might be the biggest thing in New York in a lot of ways. But the Knicks are so huge and it doesn't matter how good the Giants are, whatever there's just such a massive population that there's enough people to support everything. Everybody's going to be passionate about something. What interests me about this as somebody who just came into it is that I walked into a situation in the fall last year where everybody was saying, the Saints aren't any good and the Pelicans are coming off the playoffs. And this is like a really important year for the franchise because they're never going to be the big show here and they don't have to be. The Saints are so ingrained here. It's such a big thing. But this was the year, I think, to make a move. And a lot of people around town felt that way, that this was a year coming off the playoffs with one of the best young players in the league. I think at that point, inarguably the best young player in the league. You had a chance to get people excited in a way that, starting 1-11 just didn't allow you to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's very true. I don't know in terms of for the franchise, this is going to be a super important year. Maybe I did say that. I don't know. But I know some people did. I'm not sure how true it was. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the team clearly didn't perform. And, it's I still think, you still got a 23-year-old Anthony Davis. I mean, you could be in much worse shape. So, I mean, this franchise has been unbelievably lucky, even despite all the injuries through the years. The franchise had Chris Paul for a half dozen years, and then they got Anthony Davis. I mean, I can't really complain a lot with that kind of luck in the draft, So I could ask for better injury luck. Let's, fingers crossed again that we've had one healthy season in the last like 10 years, and that was 07, 08, it seems like. But yeah, I mean, it's hopefully this team and the fans can rally behind the franchise player and, kind of ride this upswing and get some long-term success.
It might be naive, but I never think about it in terms of like, oh, are they going to be able to keep the team? It's just never really a thought that crosses my mind. I always think about it just in terms of how much it can be a part of the culture here. I'm just fascinated by it because I'm a basketball guy who grew up in a basketball state. And so when I see other things, I'm so intrigued by how popular the sport is in different places, like the relative degree of popularity wherever you go. So like I'm interested when I go to Dallas to just see what it's like when I'm in Dallas. When I went to a Mavericks game this year, I was just curious, how do they feel about the Mavericks? How passionate is this football place about it? Like Memphis is a cool place that's really gotten into it. And Memphis is a city that I think has some things in common with New Orleans. Obviously there's no NFL team, but I think a good team that had an identity in the way that Memphis does, it wouldn't have to be the same identity, just a team where you knew what you were getting every night when you went to the arena. I think that could really get people in New Orleans excited. I think it's a place that people here know enough about basketball. There are people who care really care. And I think it could be a thing that became very popular here.
Yeah. And I think you had that with David West and Chris Paul. Those were two of the most, you knew what you were getting every night from those guys. And I think the fans appreciated and responded to that. But you mentioned Memphis and Kentucky, but the one city that was really interesting to me, I lived in Austin for 2 years going to grad school there. And that's a smorgasbord of NBA fans. It's not an NBA town by any means, but you have Spurs is probably the biggest, yeah. But you have Thunder. Well, who knows what they are now because of Kevin Durant and UT. And then you also had Dallas and Houston fans too. And it was just really, really unique. And, you know, like I said, it was football over everything in Austin. I feel like that's the case in most of Texas, but it was that was also a different environment that was really, really fun to be around fans of all these different teams.
I could see that. Austin is just quirky enough to be like, you know what? We're going to like basketball. You know, the heck with the rest of Texas. We like basketball. Obviously, they're always going to love football because of UT. But, like, I could see that. I could see it having, like, a little resonance there. Maybe Texas basketball will get going now.
Yeah, we'll see. Shocker there.
You know, they got some options. What is it – how often do you get to get back? How often do you get to go back to games?
In New Orleans?
Yeah.
Always not as often as I'd like, but one of the – yeah, I'll probably make – it was easier in Austin than making the flight down from Chicago. But I made it to two or three games last year in the Smoothie King Center. But I've enjoyed – you know, when I was in Texas those 2 years, I made it to all three Texas arenas to see the Pelicans play. Got, you know, pretty – you know, credit to the Pelicans PR team. They make it pretty easy to get media credentials in the road arenas. And I went to the – I checked out the Pelicans-Bulls game last year in their preseason game in Chicago as well. I think, you know, they're going to like to come – Pelicans like to come here a lot, I think, because of Anthony Davis now, which is pretty neat. But, you know, going to try to make Milwaukee and Indiana this year if it works out. Weekends are easier, but, you know, we'll see. It's been fun to kind of follow the Pelicans around in different arenas wherever I'm living. So that's – I would love to be able to see them more, but I'll take what I can get.
What's that – you know, this is – again, I don't know if this interests anybody, but it interests me. So we're going to talk about it. I am somebody who's grown up since I was in college. This is what I did. I went to games and I sat there and I had a seat in the arena and I, you know, talked to the players afterwards. And for somebody who didn't do it, I wonder what the experience is like now. Just kind of, you know, the Pelicans come to town, you go to the United Center, you've got a press pass. What's that experience like for somebody whose life it is not to do that?
It's really cool, but it's also really, really humbling. Like I am super shy when I'm around like the players in the locker room and interviews. I kind of just, you know, hold my phone, record and maybe ask a question if I've got something I really want to know. And then I'm on my way. Like I know there are plenty of people who that's their job, like you. And so I'm not about to step on anyone's toes or get in the way. I'm just going to kind of enjoy the experience, try to contribute as much as I can to the site I write for and just enjoy it. But it is really neat. I remember one experience in particular was my first road media credential was in San Antonio. And I was kind of on the floor. I was on the floor before the game just watching Tim Duncan warm up like 30 feet away from him. And, you know, it's somehow it's different on their home floor. And it was just really, really cool.
That's kind of a cool thing to do. There's nobody, you know, I'm older than everybody I cover pretty much. And so I don't have that sort of like, there's nobody, there hasn't been anybody who I've seen for the first time and been like, wow, I'm seeing that guy. Because I had seen Kobe Bryant play. Maybe if I might've gotten a little bit more like, you know, excited about Kobe if I hadn't gone to see him play before. But seeing Duncan for the first time, it was like a cool experience. But there's nothing makes me starstruck anymore. That's sort of sad, but true, I guess.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's the sheer like size of some of these players, yeah. You know, I obviously seen 7-footers before, but then that 7-footer is Tim Duncan, one of the greatest players ever. It was just like a real, really neat, experience and, you know, it's revelation. But, what about, you know, what's now that you're talking about your lease coming up, what, you know, how's New Orleans treated you your first year here? And, you know, don't sugarcoat it.
Well, I won't sugarcoat it. It's been I like the city a whole lot. It's one of those things I was told when I moved here, and I had visited. Everybody's visited. So like when I moved, I was told it's not for everybody. You know, it's just not a place that everybody loves. And I get it because there's challenges here, and the crime is a very real thing, and it's scary and it sucks. And not just that, but it's like it's an impossible city to learn to drive in. It's awful. The stupid median that you guys call the neutral ground for some reason, and I can't make left turns. I hate that part of it. But I love the sort of culture of it. I talked about on the podcast yesterday about, you know, the night that Prince died and going to this Soul Rebel show and all these people showing up. And I didn't get to go to the parade, the sort of Prince second line. But like the fact that the city does stuff like that is so cool. It's just, it has this vibe about it that's, every city has something that makes it different, but New Orleans is more different from everywhere else. It's just its own thing. And I love that part of it. But that said, I've lived in Kenner, and that's not New Orleans. You know, like no offense to the fine city of Kenner, where I soon will be vacating and looking for something else. But yeah, it's a, I really like it here. The food is great. The music is great. And, you know, it's my first year covering the NBA, and it's something I've wanted to do for so long, something I've tried to kind of break into for a long time. So, man, it was just an awesome year, except for the – you know, I was in the hospital for like 3 days. That was minor. Everything's fine now. Other than that, it was a great year.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I know I talked to Justin Verrier, who obviously moved to the town kind of recently too. He yeah, I met him for the first time 3 or 4 years ago. I think 4 years ago at the NBA Summer League. I was in Vegas for a buddy's bachelor party, and I happened to be during Summer League. So I was like, all right, I'll go a couple of days early and check it out. And I met him there and really hadn't seen him again until he moved to New Orleans. And last time I was in town, he and I grabbed beers, and he lives right out near near Tracy's. And So I think he's doing New Orleans. Are you thinking about heading out that way, or what's your plan? Do you have one?
Well, I got to be able to afford, we don't all make ESPN money. So, you know, like I can't, you know, it's funny, cause I moved from Lexington, Justin moved from LA, and we both had, We had very different sticker shock situations moving to New Orleans. Cause I thought this is an impossible city to find an apartment in, and Justin could not believe how affordable it was. So, you know, it's very different.
I was in totally in your shoes when I moved to Austin, because I had grad school classmates coming from DC, from San Francisco, and I was like, wow, this is expensive. And everyone else is like, are you kidding me? And you could pretty much tell from the apartments people rented where they lived before.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking now. I've got a realtor. Shout out to my realtor, Kyle. He's pretty great. Also a big Pelicans fan. And the reason he's my realtor is because I begged people on Twitter for help finding apartments.
There you go.
He's helping me out. So, you know, I'm looking at Metairie. I'm looking in New Orleans if I could find an affordable thing in New Orleans. I'd love to live in the city, but it's tricky. This is, I'm sure, fascinating to people. They have to love this. This is why you check out this podcast.
I mean, like you said, it's almost August, and people are getting to know the guys who cover the team, mainly you and Scott, because I know you guys have done a couple already. And so I think all through August, whenever you guys do podcasts, you should just talk about random topics and just let the listeners get to know you better.
Rent prices, I think, is really a good one. I think
that may be not the best idea.
But traffic. I can talk about traffic all day in the city. I can complain about traffic for a really long time. It's actually, for a city its size, I love the traffic here. It's actually very easy to get places. There's like 2 hours a day where you can't be in certain places. Otherwise, you're great. But this left turn thing is killing me. I don't get it. I don't get how you guys have done this all your lives. How did you learn to drive here? How did that work when you were 16 years old?
The Zephyr Field parking lot.
Really? That's where people learn to drive?
That's where I learned to drive. That's where my mother took me, and that's where it was big, and I didn't know, and the parking lot was empty a lot of the time. I don't know if I should have said that, but but no, I was just trying to get to know a little about, you know, your New Orleans experience and you know where you saw it going.
Yeah, if I have the option, I would like to stay here and keep doing this for a while. I've loved the experience of covering the NBA. For me is probably everything I wanted it to be and a little bit more. It's probably better than I expected it to be. Just because, you know, college is a much more sort of restrictive media environment. The players are under such control. You know, they talk under such controlled circumstances. There's no, at least when you cover Kentucky, there's no open locker room and that kind of thing until the NCAA tournament when they're forced to do it. And by that time, you've spent this whole year where you don't get to know the players particularly well. I mean, like, you get some FaceTime with guys, and guys will recognize you. Anthony Davis certainly recognized me the first time we got together and talked after I got this job. But you just don't get to, you know, these days you see a guy sometimes three times in a day if you're lucky, but certainly twice on most game days. And it's just a much, much better situation. So the job part of it is great. And the city part of it, I wasn't sure coming down. I really didn't know what I would think about it. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's good. And I've heard, you know, I've had lunch a couple of times with Joel Myers, and he echoes your sentiments, and he absolutely loves it in New Orleans. And it's really, really great to see people who, you know, haven't spent much time in New Orleans coming in and finding a place and loving it. And so as someone who misses New Orleans every day, I appreciate that a lot.
Man, I tell you, you know, if we wanted to talk about different topics on the show, I could have Joel on and talk about food, and Joel would tell people. He would set the record straight. He goes to places I can't even get into. So, I mean, he's got that locked down pretty well.
Yeah, he does.
So I think this is going to be the longest episode I've ever done, so I should probably shut up at some point and just stop. And you probably have like a life to get to. Are you taking the mound tonight? You have to pitch in a baseball game or anything?
No. Got one Wednesday, and we locked up the first seed, so we got a bye in the first round. And it's gonna be fun. It's great. Having been able to find so many baseball leagues wherever I go. I'm lucky to be able to play at this point in my life.
See, this is what I'm telling people. You said you were a baseball guy, but I'm telling people you are a baseball guy still.
Trying.
So, Mason, I appreciate you coming on, talking a little basketball, taking a break from this baseball schedule of yours and this actual job having schedule. I appreciate you coming on and talking a little bit. I want to do this periodically with people who are kind of in and around the team and, you know, veer off the beaten path a little bit. So I appreciate you kind of being my experimental first shot at this.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Let's grab beers again next time you're up in Chicago. That was a good time.
Definitely. I should have recorded that, but I didn't have a podcast at that time. But maybe next time I'll just bring the microphone. We'll go to a bar and we'll just make that happen.
There we go. Perfect.
All right. Thanks, Mason.
Yep.
So that was Mason Ginsberg. Really appreciate him coming on to do that. Hope you enjoyed that. We talked a very long time, so I'm not going to spend very much time wrapping up here. Still a few more podcasts to do this week as we round out the daily schedule before I shift into that off-season mode. So hopefully going to have a couple more guests. Might take your questions another day, although I think I'll save that for next week's once weekly podcast. But there's still plenty of stuff. I can find plenty of formats to experiment with and try some new things. So I will be here doing that. I hope you'll be here too.